Turning now to Alice, our Alice Miller reading of For Your Own Good. Quote from Alice. If someone who has turned into this kind of a person who has been forced to develop a false self, dominated by the principle of obedience, becomes a father himself, he will be confronted with a situation that threatens the whole structure he has taken such pains to erect. He sees before him a child full of life, sees how a human being is meant to be, how he could have been, if obstacles hadn't been placed in his way. But his fears are soon activated. This cannot be allowed to happen. If the child were allowed to stay as he is, wouldn't that mean that the father's sacrifices and self-denial weren't really necessary? Is it possible to have a child turn out well without forcing him to be obedient? Without breaking his will? Without combating his egoism and willfulness, as we have been told to do for centuries? Parents cannot permit themselves to ask these questions. To do so would cause no end of trouble, and they would be deprived of the sure ground provided by an inherited ideology that places the highest value on suppressing and manipulating vital spontaneity. A's father found himself in this same position, and she mentions in a footnote that the mother had also grown up with this ideology, and she is not discussing her because the faith that A, her patient, was compelled to hold in spite of the doubts he felt was such an important factor in his case, and that was connected primarily with the father. Continuing with Alice, he tried to make his son control his bodily functions while still an infant, and he succeeded in having him internalize this control at a very early age. He helped the mother to toilet train him as an infant, and by distracting him in a loving way, quote unquote, taught him to wait patiently to be fed, so that feedings were kept to an exact schedule. When A was still very little and didn't like something he was given to eat or ate too greedily, quote unquote, or misbehaved, he was put in a corner where he had to watch his parents calmly finish eating their meal. It may be that the child in the corner was serving as a surrogate for his father, who had been sent away to Europe as a child, and who had wondered what sins he had committed to cause him to be taken so far away from his beloved parents. A did not remember ever being struck by his father. Nevertheless, without meaning to and without realizing it, the father treated his child just as cruelly as he treated the child within himself in order to make a quote-unquote contented child out of him. He systematically tried to destroy everything that was vital in his firstborn. If the remnants of vitality had not taken refuge in an obsessional neurosis and from there sent out a call for help, then the son would indeed have been psychically dead, for he was only a pale shadow of his father, had no needs of his own, and no longer had any spontaneous feeling. All he knew were a depressing emptiness and fear of his obsessions. In analysis, he learned for the first time at the age of 42 what a vital, curious, intelligent, lively, and humorous child he had actually been. This child was now able to come alive in him and develop his creative powers. A gradually came to realize that his severe symptoms were, on the one hand, the result of the repression of important vital aspects of his self, and on the other, a reflection of his father's unlived, unconscious conflicts. The father's fragile piety and his split-off, unacknowledged doubts were revealed in the son's tormenting obsessions. If the father had been able to face his doubts consciously, come to terms with them, and integrate them, his son would have been freed of having to grow up with them and could have had a full life of his own at a much earlier age and without the help of analysis. And my comment on this, when she says face his fears consciously, we could as well describe this, I'm thinking, I'm still pondering all of this, as facing our questions consciously. And when she says he should then come to terms with them, could this be placing them in the most accurate context? And where does re-experiencing the suppressed rage come in? But putting them in a context which explains and therefore answers them is, in a sense, rewriting our stories, our personal one, and the story of human beings under class who have been subjected to authority.